Accession number 9168, rule number 5.
Mr. Amat, reel 5.
When I joined the LRB on the Somme in 1916, in September, I'd like to mention the fact that our dress was different altogether because this regiment was a rifle regiment. And instead of having to clean brass buttons, we were issued with black buttons made of some composite material with an embossed bugle on them, and we had to take all our old buttons off and sew these new ones on. Our cap badge was different as well, and our epaulets were piped with green, same as the Rifle Brigade and the King's Royal Rifle Corps, who were all the rifle regiments of the British Army at that time. And another thing that was different was the fact that the commands whilst on parade during drill movements was different altogether. Instead of the old stand pop at ease, company or platoon, attention, it was just stand pop at ease, and as soon as the word of either company or squad or whatever you're in was shouted out, you all came to attention automatically. And after each movement, you automatically stood at ease, which was quite new to us because we never used to this sort of thing at all. And when we marched off, the old county regiment's march was 120 paces to the minute, and the rifle regiment's pace was much quicker, 140 paces to the minute. And of course, this was different altogether, and the only thing is, we, according to the regulations, our length of pace was 28 inches compared with 30 inches in the old infantry training. But we soon got used to this and settled down to our new environment. This is as an additive to the fact that I've already recorded of when I was I went up to the front line, went over the top.
You better stop it there.
What happened to you after your parents wrote in and said you were underage to be fighting on the front?
Well, I was taken out of the line at Levante and went to a place called Merryville, not Merrycourt, where I joined the battalion before. This is Merryville. It was a town about 10 miles behind Lyons, near La Bassie. And here I was detailed to attend the officers' mess and act as a waiter, which was rather new to me. And I was taught how to lay a table for an eight-course dinner and serve the officers and generally help in the cookhouse, preparing the meals and all that sort of thing. I spent Christmas here at this place, and then I was sent back to the base at Le Havre. And here I went at the same tented lines that we'd had before on the draft that came we came out on. I'd like to explain a little bit about this camp. It was a huge camp, tented camp, all army build tents on a slope leading through a brook. And all the tents were lined up as they always are in the army, in strict straight lines. And this camp was like this the whole way through the year, winter and summer, the army build tents. And it was terraced so that you could get a level floor, and a lot of them had wooden floors, and to keep the damp out. And when I got back to this camp, I was told to report the cookhouse. And when I got there, there was a corporal of the Coldstream Guards who was acting cook sergeant. And he sent me over to a lance corporal, a very small man, a Londoner, and much older than me, and I was supposed to be under him for the rest of the time. This chap was took a rather fatherly interest in me, and he taught me how to cook in the army style in those days. But our particular part of the cookhouse was very secluded, because he was supposed to be the senior of all the cooks, because he was a pastry cook. Yeah, where did I get all you? This little section of the cookhouse was really taboo for everybody. There was nobody ever came over the line of where we were working, this chap and I. And he taught me how to, we used to make all the puddings and pies that was available for the existing rations that we were issued with. We used to, we had plenty of army biscuits, and we used to soak these in two big sinks, at the old sinks that were in the houses in those days, overnight. And then next morning we'd, after breakfast, we'd pull all these biscuits, which had swollen twice the size, out, squeeze the water out, put them on these large tables, mix some flour with them, and this was the basis of all our puddings and pies, so that the flour went much farther than normally. We also used to make all the afters, the rice puddings with the raisins dropped in and all that sort of thing, and the jam roly-polies and the spotted dogs. Quite interesting anyway, but the big thing about it was the fact that I was allowed, I had a tent all on my own, and I was woken up in the morning by the guard to go and report the cookhouse from duties. Anyway, this chap who was in charge of me, he took rather a fatherly interest, as I say, with me, and used to talk to me about going into the city of Le Havre and all the temptations there were there. But during the time I was there, I made friends with another chap who was in the same category as me. He was underage, and he was in the next line of tents, the Victoria Rifles, the 6th Battalion of the London Regiment. And we used to go about together and go down to the YMCA, which was right down the bottom of the lines, over a rustic bridge, into a large corrugated iron building where you could buy tea and cakes, and there was a restroom there where you could, with tables and chairs, and you could get writing materials so you could write home. Anyway, one day, one Friday after pay, we decided to go to Le Havre, and it was about 3.5 miles away, and we walked all the way. There was no transport in those days, and our intention was to go to one of these places of evil intent. And when we got there, the place we wanted to see was, in those days, all those places were out of bounds to troops, and the Red Caps, who patrolled the area, keeping it out of bounds, were easy enough to dodge through. And we waited till we saw two of them go by and nipped round the corner, and we got into a place called the Rue des Galions. And this was the red light district of...
Do you want me to go on?
Of Le Havre. And on the, it was all dark, but along the road was all the red lights in various houses. And you could see a light coming out of doorways, which are nearly always opened. So we got into the first one was called the Garden of Eden. So we decided to go in there, and we went in, and as you went in, there was a man at the door, seated at the door, and you had to pay him so many centimes to get in before you got to what was a bar. In the bar was well lighted, and there were plenty of troops there, but hardly any British troops. But there was Canadians and South Africans and French troops there, but hardly any, because I think in those days our pay was not sufficient to visit these places very often. Anyway, my pal and I, we went in, and of course you had to buy a drink. We bought a drink and sat down and viewed the scene, and it was really rather illuminating. There was about a dozen girls in there, and with hardly anything on, and high-heeled shoes. They had little, I think what was called chemises then, and they were sitting about on the troops' knees and in all sorts of places. And apparently the idea was that if you fancied any girl, you bought her a drink and then you took her upstairs. Well, before you went upstairs, there was a woman, which I afterwards found out was the madam of the establishment, and that you had to pay her, I think it was a franc, before you went upstairs. And then, of course, you had to pay the girl you took upstairs as well. So, as I say, these our money was so small in those days that all we could buy was a drink and a look round before we came out again, and eventually went back to camp. I stopped in Le Havre for until about beginning of April, just before my birthday, and then I was posted to back to a place called, oh, I forget the name of the place, it's just outside ours. This was at the time of the great British offensive in April 1917. I was stationed at a CCS, which is a casualty clearing station, and one of those big places where if there was a battle on, all the main casualties used to come to be operated on and treated. And our job was to help carry the stretchers from the operating theatre to the various forms of transport, the trains and the lorries, taking them back to the base. And during the time I was there, about 10 days I think altogether, we used to work about 12 hours shifts, and it was very tiring work. But the great thing about it was the fact that here, shelling was terrific. There were, I believe I afterwards learned that there was a million shells fired across the front into the German trenches when our men went over the top to capture various points. Then after I'd left there, I was sent with another chap through various forms of transport to join our unit. It were based just outside Arras, I forget the name of the place, and here they were on rest at the time, so when I joined them it was quite a restful time. We went up the line after a bit and spent several days in the front line, and came back for another couple of days, and then up again. One particular incident happened here that I'd like to record, and that is whilst we were in the line here, in a reserve position, we our cooks were able to light a fire because there was screened by trees and hills from the real front line, so the Germans couldn't see us. They lit a fire on what was a fire step, and just before it was time to serve our dinner, which was about 12 o'clock in those days, there was a terrific explosion. I was in the next bay at the time, and what had happened is they'd lit a fire on top of a box of Niels' grenades, and the whole thing blew up. But it happened to be rather fortunate because that the explosion blew all our dixies, the smithereens, little tiny pieces, and all our dinner, and the cooks, fortunately, were hardly hurt at all. They were spattered with little tiny pieces of dixie or food. I'd like to note the fact that the LRB I joined on the Somme, in peacetime, they were formed in the early part of the 19th century, and it was a select band of people, mostly composed of clerks from the City of London, and that sort of people, and you had to pay £5 to join, and then pay for your own clothes as well, so it was rather an exclusive unit.
What were your feelings when you joined this unit?
Well, my feelings were that it had to be, I had to do what I was told, and I had to go where I was told, you see. But I was rather glad I joined them rather than one of the other county regiments, because the chaps in there were rather a little bit above the normal county regiment standards, and although they didn't have a lot to do with the chaps from the county regiments who were drafted into them, they were quite a decent bunch of people. Another thing I'd like to record is the fact that when we were on rest and we had to parade, get cleaned up and go on parade every morning, and the officers, the commanding officer and the second in command, the adjutant, and all the company commanders were all mounted on chargers, and they had their own batman who was also able to look after their horses, which is quite different to what it was later on. And now I saw our colonel only once or twice during the time I was with them, and his name was Hussey, Colonel Hussey, and he was a great character, and he'd been mentioned in several history books. Eventually he was killed on the great German offensive in 1918, fighting the Germans. I think they said he was fighting the Germans with his bare hands in the trenches.
Were you actually back in fighting in the trenches at this point?
We stood to on several occasions, because we were in a very ticklish part of the front, and it's where either the British or the Germans used to make concerted attacks with a great deal of shell fire in preparation. I went up there the line one day, and one night rather, and took over from another regiment, and whilst we was up there, it was rumoured that the Germans were going to make an attack. So we stood to all night, and there was much shell fire and machine gun fire going on, and early in the morning I began to feel unwell, and I seemed to be shaking, and had headache, and the eyes ached. Anyway, we stood to all night, and I think the sergeant must have noticed my condition, because as soon as it got light, he called me over and took me back to a first aid post, which was the initial medical centre all casualties are taken to from the line. They took my temperature there and asked me what symptoms I had, and I told them, and I found out my temperature was 103, and they put my particulars on a card and slipped it into a waterproof envelope, which was tied round through one of my buttonholes of my tunic, and was told to go back about a mile across the open land to another medical centre. I was a bit scared at this because it was in broad daylight, but eventually I arrived there without any harm. And when I got there, I had a job to find the place, although there was a board up indicating it, but it happened to be a hole in the ground. And you slid down this sort of a slope into a large cavern. And this had been made into a medical centre with stretchers on the floor and medical orderlies and all sorts of things addicted to that sort of job. I was given some lime juice to drink, and all my rifle was handed in, and all my equipment and ammunition, and all I kept was a water bottle and a haversack with my cleaning materials in, and shaving equipment. And from there, in the evening, we were taken out and walked back to farther behind the lines to another centre where there was a one-horse ambulance. It was a kind of a four-wheeled coach thing with a canopy over the top, one horse in it, and a Red Cross on the either side of the canopy. And we got up, we're all what they call walking wounded, so we got up in this, several of us, and the horse plodded on and took us back to Arras. When we got to Arras, after about a couple of hours' ride, we arrived at a large stone building, and this was a convent which had been turned into a hospital. They were all French nuns in this place, and we were taken upstairs, or several flights of stairs, stone steps, and each one of these big rooms was lined with iron bedsteads with mattresses and blankets and sheets, which is quite something for us. Anyway, we were told to undress and get in bed, and we were very glad of that, because after living in the trenches for so long, it didn't take long for us to all be fast asleep. Next morning, we were woken up about 7 and told to dress quickly, and that the nuns came along, all acting as nurses, and escorted us down several flights of steps through a basement, which was most of the French houses had in those days after the war of the previous century between Germany and France. And the nuns explained to us that every day at 8 o'clock the Germans used to shell the city, and we were taken down there as a precaution. We heard the shells coming over at 8 o'clock, all right, but it didn't last very long, and there was none very near where we were. Well, they took us upstairs, and we were given a meal, and in the afternoon, we had another journey to make, this time by lorry. They took us out to the CCS that I'd previously been in before I joined the unit. Here, the usual thing, we saw a medical officer, temperature was taken and particulars taken down, and then I was passed on, and we went back by train, along with a lot of other wounded and sick, and we eventually arrived at a base hospital at Rouen. Hospital was all tented, large marquees, all joined together, duck boards on the floor, and it was quite comfortable beds, the same as we had in the convent, but this time they were all British nurses. I was there about 2 or 3 days, but the rumour went round that the British were making another attack, so that all the CCSs and hospitals had to be cleared to take the new wounded. And I was rather surprised to learn that I was picked out to be taken down to the docks, which was adjoining Rouen, and we boarded a ship, a hospital ship. And we sailed on the evening tide, and it was quite something to see these, watch the scenery go by as we sailed up the river to Le Havre, which was the mouth of the river. when we got to Le Havre, we stayed there until about midnight, and then we were met by some French gunboats and escorted across the channel to Southampton. We sailed all night and nothing happened, but plenty of scares and alarms. And we got in somewhere about 8 o'clock on the morning, the following morning.